Michael Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
the World Atlas of Cheese, probably episode 12. We've done a whole series of introduction to the theory of cheese, and with that the cheese theory, we've gone through Europe. We've gone through a fairly quick but interesting tour of the Americas, starting with the startling biggest cheeses, cheese scams by the Americans to adulterate cheese, which has knocked them off the pedestal as a authentic cheese place, and then further down to Central America, as they say, cheese vendor in Mexico, white fresh cheese is by far the most popular type in the most Latin American countries, so they like the white fresh cheese with no maturation and all that palaver. Mexico is typically Latin American, spicy culture, which is why Mexicans enjoy enchiladas, a cheese covered with chili powder. So the story here, the Venezuela Guianas, sort of discussion of that, Colombia, Peru, Argentina, which is their large lands, and various mozzarellas from there. Then there's Brazil, with their large regions there. They haven't yet cleared the Amazon to make cheese. Then we go through Chile, which I really can't remember anything about Chile, but they have cheeses nonetheless, and they show Chile, which is a fairly desolate place. Then we go through Africa. They do all of Africa and South Africa. Of course, that was founded by the Dutch people, so there's a lot of cheese there. And now we do, as continents, we've got Europe, Americas, Africa, now the Middle East. The Middle East is actually a continent or an area. And we do Turkey, and there's actually rather a nice look of these, a lot of women out in the field in Turkish dress, milking the sheep. Here it says, the large flocks of sheep cover great distances searching for fresh grazing. Wherever sheep go, the shepherds and their families go too. Part of the fresh sheep's milk is made into such cheeses as Emmis Panier and ancient nomad cheese. There you go, ancient nomad cheese. And then, what was it, the cheese, I think it was in Italy, as the cows came down, tired cheese from tired cows. It's an interesting little story. I like the little story about how the Romans liked cheese, moulded it into figurines before eating it. Turkey is the connecting link between European and the Asiatic world. On the European side lies Istanbul, the former Byzantine capital of the Byzantine Imperium, an extravagantly beautiful pearl set in a fertile rolling landscape of Thracia. On the Asiatic side, there is a totally different picture. It is dominated by high central plains of Anatolia, is disconnolate, barren, treeless, steep region of sheep and goats. The irregular fringe of the Mediterranean coast used to be part of the Levant and Roman seafarers. Traders brought and sold many goods, including cheese, in the marketplaces of commercial towns. It is possible, but by no means certain, that cheese was made in Turkey during Neolithic times, well before Romans. But we do not know for sure the area has been producing cheese for centuries in more modern times. We do know for sure. Agriculture remains the most important means of existence, although the farms are generally small and often primitive. In recent years, modern farming and cattle breeding methods have been introduced, and turkey stocks kept for both meat and milk number 15 million cows, a similar number of goats, and 35 million sheep. I think we have in Australia a stunning number of sheep, whose milk goes to make favourite national cheese. One of the problems facing the dairy industry is the lack of good cattle fodder. Not enough acres are under cultivation, with the result that animals are only moderate quality and the milk yields are low. This is unfortunate, since the cheese is one of the most important food items on the Turkish table. The farms that provide milk, however, are numerous and widespread. Milk, sheep's milk, is a type generally preferred for cheese making, either alone or mixed with cow's or goat's milk. Cheesemakers pay a deposit to farmers in the autumn, which enables them to collect milk from the farmers the following spring, for as long as the lactation period of the animals lasts. If the distance from the farm to the cheese dairy is too far to be practical, the milk may be processed into curd in a small regional dairy before being sent to a larger dairy or factory to finish the process. Although communications are greatly improved late, for most cheese factories or it's in the Turkish Mandira. So I get an idea that we'll see what the Turkish for cheese is, as they are called, are located near the big cities where they have a large market and obtain good prices. Turkey's salty favourite. The soft, fresh Beynaz Peynir accounts for 95% of the total production of sheep's milk cheese. Because it's traditionally made of sheep's milk, the cheese is to be found throughout Turkey, and in particular Thracia. That's where Istanbul is. The milk must be very fresh and free from impurities. On the farm, raw milk is filtered through a cloth. Well, there you go. We've got ultrafiltration, they've got cloth filtration. This is not that bad, because a lot of diseases are actually picked up in cloths. If you just cloth filter water, you can get rid of cholera. That's one of the most amazing things. Not because the cholera bacteria is on these tiny mollusks, sea mollusks, which get into the water. So you can actually filter it out. On the farm, in the factory, the milk is pasteurized and passed through cleaning centrifuges. When it is added, the milk curdles in 1.5 to 2.5 hours. The curd is then cut into pieces, wrapped in pieces of cloth, put on a press, which may, in the simple farm dairies, be a few heavy stones. 3 hours after pressing, the curd is unpacked and cut into little cubes. To give the cubes greater consistency, they're often immersed in brine. So brine, salt water, the high salt content of the water migrates to high salt content. As soon as they've dried out, they are carefully laid in tins. Between each layer of cheese, a layer of salt is added, and as soon as the container is full, any remaining whey is poured off and replaced by clean brine. The lid then is soldered on, and the cheese is left or right in the brine anywhere up to 6 to 7 months. Sometimes the cheese is sold fresh, but when it's cured, it has a much better and more individual taste. Not surprisingly, the cheese is rather salty. Salt may account for 50% of the total dry matter. It can be soaked in fresh water to dispel some of the salt before use. Casa Pinier. That's an important thing, I think, with salt. We're using preservatives. We should wash some of the food. Casa Pinier. So I think it's Pinier is the Turkish for sweet for cheese. Kaiser mentioned it, probably Kaiser. Takes the second place in Turkey. It too is generally sheep's milk cheese, but may be a mixed milk or even solely cow's milk cheese, depending on the availability. The hard plastic curd of Kashkaval type. There are quite a few varieties of the plastic curd type. As Abazar Peynir is a small flat round cheese made in the north-northeast of Turkey. It's produced from a different types of milk, or combinations of milk. Some of the cheeses are smoked and known as Kres Peynir, P-E-Y-N-I-R. The smoking increases and keeps the properties. Emrys Peynir is produced by the nomads southeast of Anatolia. It's sold and ripe on local markets and brought by merchants who ripen it further, similar to the way the French have affineurs, they're called. In a matter of the French affineur, there you go. Tel Peynir is a lean, kneaded cheese made from skim milk left over from butter making. So you've got to actually, when you skim off the fat to make butter. That's interesting. What is butter? What is it? Just fat, or what is it? Tel Peynir is another interesting cheese, reminiscent of the Romanian Brinza. Of course, if you had a good memory, you remember what the Romanian cheese is, but for me, that's all of the reading too much. It is older than the Casa Peynir and becoming rather rare. To milk of an unspecified type, olive oil and yogurt may be added. The curd is cut into large sacks, suspended from the ceiling for an hour or more, and rigorously pressed by hand in order to expel the whey. The rather dry curd is then taken out, crumbled and salted, and packed into a talhum. It just really strikes me that I have a cheese invention coming into my head, and that's the release of whey is by ultrasonics. You can do two things. Ultrasonics could be a form of pasteurization. Rather than temperature, the ultrasonic wave is to actually burst the bacteria. I'll have to talk about that one. So you can use ultrasonics and the intense sound waves pasteurize the milk and make it a bit more natural. I'll have to, have a big ask about this because I think this is a cheese invention. So pasteurization is basically you heat the milk up in a small temperature range, a high temperature range, and it kills basically the bacteria, makes the milk sterile. But you can also do that with ultrasound. You can actually, bacteria can only take a certain amount of ultrasound. Now, ultrasound is also interesting because it could actually change the properties of the curd, make the whey come up. A bag may have cleaned a dry skin of sheep goat. The cheesemaker presses cheeses into the bag using a stout wooden club to compress the curd. He then adds a few handfuls of salt and ties up the sack. The cheese is left to ripen for 3 to 4 months in a cool place until it becomes quite firm. Around Bursa, opposite Istanbul, across the Sea of Marmara, a hard brine cheese is made known as the Mayhalik Peynir. So Peynir. Two cheesemakers are needed to process the cheese. The first step for them is to half fill an oak barrel with first grade sheep's milk. Oh God. Because that tells me there's going to be second grade sheep's milk coming around here. After curdling, the cheesemaker begins to crumble the curd, slowly creating a well in the center of the mass. I can imagine that. While one continues to work on the curd, the other pours hot water into the hollow, bringing the temperature of the curd between 40 and 45 degrees. I just think that's highly unlikely to be completely effective because it heats in the centre, but this will be room temperature on the outside. After a rest of 1.5 hours, the curd has sunk to the bottom of the barrel and scooped out into a cheese cloth. So the curd's floating for some reason? The curd contained in the cloth is suspended from the ceiling and beaten to get rid of the whey. Well, there you go. That's pretty much the same thing. Rather than beating the curd with a stick, you can beat it with ultrasound. The curd contained in the cloth is... Okay. The cheesemaker then removes the curd and cut into large pieces before immersing the brine baths for the correct salt content. The brine bath doesn't actually necessarily remove salt. Now, it is interesting that you could use albumin to actually remove salt, if you did it correctly. After 15 days, the cheese is transferred to wooden vats, where it is allowed to ripen for about 3 months. More salt is added as necessary, and the vat is hermetically sealed, as they tend to do. Good Mayhalik has a rather salty taste. Its rind is thick and light colour. The paste is firm and characteristic of a number of small eyes. Recently, some foreign cheeses have been introduced and processed in the natural selection. Processed cheese is now made. This factory has started to produce Gruyère-like cheese called Gevat Peynir, which is the Turkish for cheese. That does you Turkey. Syria, poor old Syria, has been in the news a lot, but this is the prospect of Syria as seen in 1976 by someone who's really into cheese. Now, to understand, when the Ottoman Empire was divided between the British and the French took Syria and Lebanon. Oh, what's the English? Let's hear from it. Syria, wherever there is a supply of milk, cheese can be made, and it is invariably made wherever there is a surplus. In a temperate climate, we would expect to find cheese of both quantity and variety, but in a desert country like Syria, the product such as cheese, has little economic importance, and therefore a few but small factories. Most of Syria's cheese is made by farmers and the wandering groups of Bedouin. Agriculturally speaking, Syria's prosperity comes from wheat, barley, cotton, sheep breeding, and cultivation of fruits and vines. Not much cheese is sold in the market. It's mostly produced for the cheesemaker's own consumption, and that for his family. Lebanese is Bedouin cheese, which is made from boiling sour milk with rice or barley until it thickens into a homogeneous mass. It's left for 3 days and then mixed with thyme and other herbs and then packed in small stone pots and topped up with olive oil. I like the additional protein. Types of sour milk kas, so that's a kas, I think is the German one, is made from skim milk, mostly from the sheep and goats, but cow's milk might be added when they're available. Whole milk is first put aside in leather bags of 12 to 24 hours to become sour. So the leather is got rennet and the bacteria in it. After curdling, the mass in the bag is kneaded and shaken until the butter fat is separated. Okay, that's an interesting theme. The butter is then removed and the remaining skim milk curd is mixed with salt and hung up in cotton bags. As soon as sufficient whey has drained from the curd, it's formed in small balls the size of apricots, put into a glass jar and then covered with olive oil as a preservative measure. These cheeses, when over a year old, are known as Leben Bezet. Other domestic cheeses made from the sheep's and goat's milk are Avisk, Ifrafi, and Stramboli. Ifrafi is a globe-shaped cheese. The remaining two are rectangular with rounded edges. There are also semi-hard types that are good keeping properties, mainly due to their salt content. Hulon and Shual are made all over Syria, and particularly in the eastern steppe areas. Curd is cut in strips, immersed in salt, and then dried in air. The salt spreads throughout the cheese, and is boiled in fresh water. That's interesting that you do have these iron transport and also nanoparticles. Like, you could be interesting if you put certain nanoparticles, especially magnetic nanoparticles, in cheese. I was just wondering about the conductivity, whether you could actually electrically treat cheese. Salt spread through the cheese and boiled in fresh water. Kashwan is a kashval type that is finished in a small cheese factories for ready-to-make curd supplied by the cheesemakers. That Syria didn't really have much to talk about. Syria, she sort of hit rock bottom. Lebanon gets a similar story. So Lebanon is French. It's interesting how it was divided up. In Lebanon, milking from cheese is supplied by Bedouins and small farmers like this one. Posing with his animals on a mountain track. So it's not a small, but he's actually physically small. And he could be small if his goats are small, because he's actually rather big. Lebanon is situated on the east coast of the Mediterranean, with Israel to the south and Syria encircling the east and north. Its vision gives rise to great seasonal contrast: hot, often scorching summers, mild, wet winters. A chain of mountains runs parallel to the coast, where winter snows provide reservoirs of water for summer supply. Lebanon, one of the old Levant states, was a prosperous trading center and seafaring Phoenicians 1,000 years before Christ, with the bustling towns of Byblos, Sidon, and Tyre. Because of its central position, it has remained a great trading area, with Beirut its principal city. The country is undoubtedly one of the most developed of all Middle East states. Education standards are high, and there are 3 different universities in the capital. Thank you. Favorable trade and social advantages have done little, however, to prevent the intermittent periods of internal strife in recent years. The political situation has greatly disturbed the economy, persuading many important companies to move, at least temporarily, to quieter countries. There is a little industry owing to the shortage of raw materials, apart from oil refineries and most economic activities, the arable farming, and to a less extent in cattle. So that's Lebanon. You're not having great expectations of it. You've got an idea where it is, but it's got four cheeses happening in four paragraphs. So let's go, and we're going to read it. The people's cheeses. As in other Middle Eastern countries, it is the Bedouin, as far as the farmer who supplies most of the milk and make cheeses. A typical Bedouin cheese is the halum, a durable sheep's milk variety. It's slightly yellow in colour and tough and salty to the taste. It's found in most Lebanese markets and often skewered and grilled over charcoal. Because of the ability as a cooking cheese, its adaptability as a cooking cheese, halloween is found all over the Middle East and even as far west as Greece, where it is known as halloumi. Oh, I think that is halloumi. I didn't know that's a cheese. Oh, well, there you go. As far south as Australia. I think I've heard of halloumi. I think we do have halloumi, and it's in Australia, where it's called halloumi. Believe that, look at that. Urquhart, you are fantastic. If only I could meet you now. I don't know where you are at the moment, Urquhart. But there you go. That's almost readable. I am in Australia. It's called halloumi here. And why is it in Australia? Oh, because we've got a large Lebanese population here. Serving the cheese as a kind of kebab probably originated in Turkey. In general, though, the cheeses are not much used in the Middle East in cooking. Most people prefer to eat it fresh form. The most popular cheese in Lebanon is the Belaldi, the Arabic word for native. This is a white cheese with crumbly texture. Originally it was made only from sheep's milk, but today cow's milk is used. The finished product is made both salted and unsalted. Akawai is made exclusively from cow's milk, which is a rather short supply. This results in the cheese being more expensive than the standard range of sheep's milk cheeses. Labneh, which is made of a local variety, is popular throughout the Middle East. It is made by draining sour milk, which was attained consistently. Labneh is one of the most simple kinds of cheese, as the thickening and draining processes, it needs no further processing. The cheese varieties, according to the type of milk, various type of milk used, and the fat content of the milk. In Lebanon, there is a cheese-making unit at the institution controlled by the Catholic monastery, and a few cheese factories in Chatura and Sia, but for the most part, the cattle breeding is a great priority with the dairying. Greater priority than dairying, cheese manufacturing does not take place on any notable scales. So there you go. Urquhart Stork mentions Australia for the first time. And it is true that I know about halloumi cheese. Israel gets typically has a double spread, and they want to market the place. Now, 1976, I don't think Israel has had the 7-week war, the 6-week war. I don't think Israel has expanded quite yet. 76 is a part of time. Apart from a narrow strip along the east coast of Jordan Valley in the north, Israel is dominated by the Negev Desert, which is partly irrigated to provide arable land for mixed farming. Cheese may have been introduced to Israel from Mesopotamia. According to the Old Testament, Abraham and his shepherd people, who migrated to Haran to settle Chan, knew about cheese. Their cheeses would certainly have been those small white sheep milk types so popular in the Middle East. Industrial genesis. Because of Israel's tremendous progressive development brought about by employing Western techniques and standards to industry and agriculture, agricultural productivity, Israel now has the most advanced cattle breeding and dairy industry in the Middle East. By applying the results of scientific research, production has increased 25% over the past 5 years. To produce a fairly wide range of European cheeses, supply good quality dairy milk is necessary. With this in mind, Israel's cattle breeders crossbred native cattle with imported Frisians, establishing the Israeli Frisian type. This is perfectly adapted to the climatic conditions and can be hardly distinguished from a pure Frisian breed. By judicious breeding and provision of the right roughage, extra fodder and good care, cows now have a milk yield between 5,300 to 6,500 litres of quartz yearly supplied by the Israeli government, I'm sure. They're thus among the world's greatest milk producers and, as such, are bred for export. On collective farms, the kibbutzim, herds of some 200 to 250 cows, which is nothing, are maintained. While on ordinary farms, the herds are from 15 to 20. The size of the herd is dependent on the availability of roughage and imported concentrates. Israel's sheep have also benefited from the introduction of progressive farming techniques. The Awasasi breed is a favourite. With careful selection and good breeding, the sheep produces some 250 litres per lactation period in December to July. Fat content is 7.4 to 11% of fat-free dry matter. Of 7.4% and 11% of fat-free dry matter. The sheep's milk is used for both cheese and yogurt. There you go. Land of the milk. In 1920, Brinza cheese was bought from the Balkan, Turkey and Russia to Palestine. Shortly after, a few kibbutzims began to make brinza from the sheep's milk, although the conditions in those days were rather primitive. Today, modern cheese factories, especially in the manufacture of sheep's milk cheese and fine quality brinza, is produced. These little cheeses are rectangular in shape and weigh about 300 grams. 25% cows or goat milk is added. Something called Gruwina Zafati. Zafatit. A cheese containing a high percentage of salt has been made for centuries in North Galilee. Originally it was a rather large sized sheep milk cheese, but factories now make smaller versions with a lower fat content. The cheeses are eaten fresh for the most part and easily recognizable for their flat, round shape and by impressions left by the basket in which they were prepared. To make the cheeses, pasteurized milk is curdled at a rather high temperature. The curdle is regularly turned in the basket but not pressed. At the surface is salted dry. The product is stored in a cool place. Gruwina Zafatit has a white paste both inside and outside, and is pliant but fresh, I hope you say. As the cheese mature, they become very hard. They are made with varying fat contents. A full fat cheese, 45% to 25% milk, might be used. The half fat cheese, 28%, with a mixture of cows and goats and sheep's milk is allowed. Bedouin usually make Djibin cheese from such a mixture, cutting and pressing the curd into rectangular pieces. Djibin is eaten after a day, but can be kept for months in brine. Then there's Lebne, a sort of drained yogurt that's found. A sort of drained yogurt that's found in the Middle Eastern countries under different names. It can be eaten fresh or formed into little balls that are either preserved in olive oil or dried in the sun to make dubeki a real delicacy. The whole cheese can also be sun-dried. Then known as the kilsk, K-S-L-I-K, kislik. Now what I was going to say is the Dutch have feet cheese. You know, of all the things that hidden the earth has told us about the foot cheese one. Hygienic feet, but their feet would be rather cheesy. As the drying process makes the cheese very hard, kislik must be softened before eating. As might be expected, in a hot climate, great care must be exercised by cheesemakers if you produce European types. For a long time, European cheeses were made from imported skim milk powder and margarine. Margarine. Now margarine is no longer used. The milk powder is used only during the months of low milk production. At this time, the best low-fat milk powder is used in combination with fresh milk. Only the best low-fat milk powder. Such good quality is achieved that these cheeses are indistinguishable from paired with fresh milk alone. Yeah. Okay. Now, cheese goes kosher. The government provides subsidies to keep the price of fresh cheese in line with the other foodstuff. The industry contributes its share by making available a great assortment of attractive packages. Ripened cheese are made are mainly standard type marketed under fancy names, including Ramadur, Limburg, Camembert, Belpass, Brie, Edam, Gouda, Dambo, Cheddar, and Emmental types, as well as Cashvale and Roquefort. And Provolone types are later three names, three being made by sheep's milk. What I was going to say is that in 76, Israel didn't pay no attention to the Stresa convention, and just markets margarine and milk powder, cheese, as one of these. One of Israel's specialties is kosher cheese, which is widely exported along with types of processed cheese. The annual consumption of processed cheese and natural cheese together is 12.5 kilograms per head. Today, the most modern manufacturing methods are applied to cheese making. A completely closed and controlled cooling chain is utilized from animal to consumer. Automation will shortly be taken further with the introduction of aseptic pre-packing, the programming of production and planning, and the planning of delivery is. Oh, that's a bit weird. That's really Urquhart. This is sort of so. One of the Israeli government has broken into Urquhart's book. Jordan. We're back to a real country now. Jordan. Only the narrow mountainous west strip of Jordan is fertile. It is at the capital of Amman that the major part of the population, numbering around 2 million, has settled. Agriculture is practically the sole natural source of prosperity in this region, but irrigation has only been carried out on a small scale. Crops are still greatly dependent on weather conditions. Poor Jordan. The remaining part of the country consists of basalt deserts and sandstone mountains. This is a land of Bedouins, the nomadic tribes who tents are made in the goatskin and have inherited the job of administering livestock and dairy produce throughout the most of the Middle East. The Bedouin herds now number 75,000 sheep, and which is that will be a sheep station in Australia. 75,000 sheep would be a sheep station in Australia. 600,000 goats, 20,000 camels, and 60,000 cattle. As of old, most cheese is made from goat sheep milk. A existence of prosperous Dutch cows on this barren, gravelly soil animals, which have their own country, are used to green lush meadows. So, a most surprising phenomenon is these Dutch cows, which are just in this gravelly country. You can imagine a Dutch cow going, "Oh, dingle dingle, where's my windmolen? My windmolen." So I do know some Dutch. It's taught to me by some Dutch people, actually in Egypt. The windmolen is unploft, means the windmill has blown up. Development aid has made the miracle possible, even though the rest of their lives, the animals have to exist on a diet of chopped straw, alfalfa, and concentrated fodder. Bearing in mind the importance of good grazing for cheese making, it's obvious that the restricted diet is a major influence on the type of quality of cheese produced. Perhaps it is hoped that the milk of Dutch cows might be able to provide something approaching European variety of cheese. You don't need that. All you need is the Israelis just across the road are just using a combination of propaganda, margarine, and milk powder. Okay. And of course, the Americans who tried something like that got absolutely caned. Okay. Milk of Dutch cows might be able to provide something approaching. Given time for the cattle to adapt to the climate and fodder, such cheeses may be possible in the future as a result of greater prosperity. The influence of Western culture and the continued development of irrigation is likely, though, that cow's milk cheese will have a hard time competing against the traditional no-bid favourites. You know what? I would like to have shown a picture of a Dutch cow in the desert in 76. Okay, Labneh and fresh cheese. In Ras Fair near Amman is a brand new cheese factory. Evident of the primitive of the industry is that the cow's milk is transported there by donkey. The factory produces a yogurt-like Laban and a thicker Labneh, and some fresh cheese. Labneh is produced by heating fresh milk with a small quantity of fatless milk powder to approximately, well, they still use powder to 85 degrees. It's kept at temperature for 5 minutes and then cooled to 47 degrees. Milk is then soured, poured into churns, and placed in an incubation room until it reaches the correct rear acidity. After a period of 2 days in a cooling cell, the content is poured into bags and left to drain for 14 hours. The drainage is hastened by the placing of churns filled with water on the top bags. Finally, Labneh maker adds salts mass of 1.5% to the mixture, then packs the cheese in plastic beakers. For the production of the fresh cheese, a mixture of 7% milk and 3% fatless milk powder is used. The heat is heated to 47 degrees Celsius and then cooled to 36 degrees Celsius. The rich temperature for adding rennet. After 30 minutes, hot water is added. The curd is poured into a cloth mounted on a wooden screen so it may drain. So, I like the Turkish people who got the thing at a certain point, just belted the bejesus out of it, put it up in a bag. I don't know what country it is, you'll probably able to remember it. I love the idea of putting cheese, you know, all this loving cheese, and then this one person says, oh, crap, I'm just going to get the cheese and smash it with a stick. I think it was Lebanese cheeses? Israel? No, it was the Turkish cheese they put up in a sack and beat the crap out of it. Okay. Production of fresh cheese, mixture of 97% milk, 3% fatless milk powder is used. It is heated, well, I hope milk powder is fatless. I just fatted the heat. After 30 minutes, hot water is added and the curd is poured into a cloth and mounted on a wooden screen so it may drain. The curd is then formed by hand into rectangular pieces, which is wrapped in some little square cloths and pressed for about 10 minutes. The cloth is then removed and small cheeses are transported in camel-drawn vehicles to the various markets. Modern economy. I don't think camels and donkeys, I sort of rather like them. You mentioned the car park there, all these camels in the car park. Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia comprises the greater part of the Arabian Peninsula, a vast plateau gradually ascending east towards the rocky ridge that rises steadily inaccessibly from the Red Sea. The country has a dry climate, it seldom rains, and most of the land is inhabited by Bedouin Muslims, the majority of whom are Wahhabite, a sect that forbids the use of tobacco and alcohol. Life in the desert depends on prosperity of the oasis, as on all countries, the extensive desert and steep regions, particularly in Saudi Arabia, are two main groups of people, farmers and with permanent homes in the oasis and nomad tribes. The farmers cultivate corn, vegetables, fruits and particular fine quality dates, which is widely exported. Nomads, mostly Bedouin, who wander with their families searching for areas of grace in the arid desert. They are continually on the move, taking with them their camels, sheep, goats, and leading a meager, hard life. Now we find out that Jordanian Bedouins have been lumped with a Dutch milk cow, who's rather confused. Mother of camels. Bedouins' food consists mainly of camels and goat milk cheeses. And I wonder the camel, where's the camel? Bread is rather scarce. Meat is a rare treat, which is often an occasion of the party. Sometimes old senile camel dies, providing extra unexpected feast, or perhaps a lizard or a desert rat is caught and finds its way into the pot. There are few peoples living in a more inhospitable land in greater poverty, yet their pride and stability is legendary. As far as the Bedouins are concerned, life without a camel in Saudi Arabia, the dormant dromedary would be insupportable. It's a faithful helper and milk source. One of the plateaus of the Arabian Peninsula, also the legend goes, the first camel was tamed. This happened thousands of years ago, but the plateau remembered the revered by the Arabs and called the Om El Bel, the mother of camels. Arabs recognized in the constellation Orion the shape of a camel, and the Pleiades a small herd of camels. Isn't that close? I really like that. Thank you, Earth of Stork. It's about cheese, but I wanted to know about star systems and camels, because they are producers of cheese. So how do you see a camel? The source, Orion's the sourceman as a warrior. They call it the Big Dipper. Pleiades are called, Japanese Pleiades are called Subaru. You know the car, Subaru? After the birth of a calf, the mother yields for 2 years a white sweet milk which is rather fatty. This goes to the camel's calf for the first year and to the camel's owner for the second year for consumption. The nomad cheeses, Bedouins generally call their cheese gibni, which they normally use sheep's and goat milk. The milk is curdled and the aid of animal rennet, or with sap of a fig leaves and other vegetable juices. Juniper is prepared in boiling milk and then cooling it to 25 degrees Celsius, as if they've got a thermometer there, my godfather. The curd is formed by immersing a strip of salted lamb's stomach in the milk. Salted. After about an hour, the curd is found floating on the top of the whey. So this is interesting. A curd can actually float on whey. This is where I got confused, because I suppose the whey would be, if the curd's got a large amount of fat in it, it would float, I suppose. When it's skimmed off and laid on cloth, the ends of which are folded over to enclose the curd, which is pressed between two planks. A heavy object on the other plank gives the Jenner cheese a flat, round shape. The product is either eaten immediately or boiled for 15 minutes to brine. The alternative method of preserving the cheese is to store in a weak, cold brine in a tightly closed barrel. The salt is washed off before use. What the nomads produce in excess of their own cheese needs is usually sold on small shops that sell dairy produce. In addition to these cheeses, Saudi Arabia imports quantities of white cheese types, principally from Russia, Romania, and Czechoslovakia. Poor. What are they going to do now? Iraq. 76. Iran doesn't get a mention. Okay. So, this is accused, but Iraq gets a mention. So, Iran is just... Oh, no, Central and East Asia, would that be... Oh, Iran does get a mention in Central and East Asia. 6,000 years ago, in an area of Iraq known as the Fertile Crescent, the Sumerians laid one of the foundations of the world's oldest civilizations. And that's what I learned in around this year when I was at school. The area is fertile because it lies between two great rivers, the Euphrates and Tigris, where centuries of agriculture and cattle breeding has been the most important means of existence. So rich are the grazing lands that the milk and cheese production far exceeds the domestic requirements, and the surplus is brought to markets to be purchased from town dwellers, among them the priests, writers and craftsmen, who made cities like Ur and Nevia into cultural centres. So we do understand that cheese is a product of, an exportable product of agriculture. Of milking. Unlikely that the Sumerians were the first to learn the skill of cheese making. Ancient though civilization proves to have been, primitive Neolithic farmers cultivated fertile crescents long before them. It's thus they who were the first to discover the wild indigenous wheat from which they made bread, and they probably knew how to make cheese as well. Compared with these farmers, the Sumerians and Babylonians cultures were highly civilized, as archaeological discoveries have shown. As we know from the Old Testament, that the pastoral people included cheese in their daily diet, as we confirm with the discoveries of Ur. One of the panels of the so-called Royal Standard depicts cows, sheep, and dairy utensils. On the Sumerian frieze, found at El Abid, The milking and curdling of milk is pictured with artistic detail. Sir Leonard Woolley, who was in charge of excavations between 22 and 34, writes that cheese was made from milk from cows and goats. Thank you for writing that. From this cradle of civilization, the art of cheese making spread slowly westward to the ancient Greece and Rome. I love that, Yerkov. I didn't know what the civilization was doing, but they're just developing cheese making and decided to spread it. Iraqi specialties. Today, Iraq cheese is still being made, but on a modest scale without much care. Just a bit like Aussie cheese. Just cheese in the shed. Most cheeses are generally made from sheep's milk during the months of April, May and June. To make Mira, curdle milk is heated until the curd separates from the whey. It's then put into linen bags and pressed into a heavy stone to expel the remaining whey. After salting, the curd is cut into strips and the sheepskin can be stored for 6 to 12 months. It eventually becomes quite hard and sold in the market of Baghdad. Lure is made in whey in which milk is added. The curd is salted but not pressed. The cheese may be eaten fresh. Fajay, a lean cheese flavoured with garlic and onion, for which no rennet is used. Fajay is not marketed, but is entirely for home use. Thank you. Iraq also makes some mozzarella and cottage cheese, and there is a substantial... production of processed cheese. Iraq is the largest processed cheese factory in the Middle East. For its preparation, considerable quantities of cheddars are imported. So, I don't quite understand what processed cheese is. Now, mozzarella, I'll go back to Italy. We're on to Central and East Asia. And we've got 46 minutes. I just want to go back to Italy to get to mozzarella, Soviet Union. Well, we've got 23 pages of this. Portugal, Romania, Spain. Italy must be here. Italy. Now, what I don't understand is... Portugal is a hopeless country, isn't it? Just variable, it's cheese. Mozzarella, it's cheese from buffalo. So mozzarella cheese is from buffalo, but... This is cheese with a buffalo and lots of cheese the world famous due to being the main ingredient in pizza. Mozzarella is made from buffalo milk. That's on page 126. And we go up to Iran, Central America, across here. Now, across here. This is why I get in so much trouble in life. Like, people tell me a business plan and I say, hang on. Back on page such and such, you didn't say that. And of course, if people are sort of pretty shonky, their thing is just shut that bloody scientist up. Get rid of him. Like, I go through books and stuff like that. Now let's see. Iraq also makes some mozzarella and cottage cheese. Now what is processed cheese? I really don't understand that. But this, Iraq, we've got left up 83 pages, and 82 pages, and we've got things here, cheese in shops, there's the storage and treatment of cheese. There's not many countries left here. Look, New Zealand's the last thing, and it's 83, it's only 10 more pages to do the rest of the world. Now, that's Central and East Asia. So, just read you through. That's Iran, Afghanistan, Pakistan. Pakistan only gets two paragraphs. China, Tibet. Japan, who's lactose intolerant. There you go. All of Japan is lactose intolerant. And they can't say. India and Nepal. Probably, sorry about Sri Lanka. Other Asian countries, which are called, include the Philippines. Sorry about Vietnam. You think the French, Australia, New Zealand, and I'm sure they've left a few countries out. Like, I don't know. Like, for sure, I'd talk about Madagascar. I'm sure they've left whole countries out. So I'll get this out, and we'll have a look at it, and we'll read the last bit off. And after the first talk, it's got a general thing about eating cheese in the 70s. And it's cheese recipes. I'll read cheese with wine. Processed cheese. Here you go. You know, I wanted to know what processed cheese are, and now I'll just read you the definition. In the United States, processed cheese is defined. Pasteurized processed cheese is a dairy product result from mixing and heating several lots of natural cheese with suitable emulsifying agents into a homogeneous mass, following this with cooling. It may contain fruits and vegetable meats. So you get a whole lot of natural cheeses, and you mix them together to process it. Thank you, United States. And it's 3 types of processed cheese. We'll get all this processed cheese. It is the Encyclopedia Atlas. And finishes with processed cheese. I'll just read the last paragraph for processed cheese. That will be a couple of episodes away. The big advantage of processed cheese is that it keeps well, much better than natural cheese. It's practically sterile and does not ripen further thanks to the high temperature attained by the production process. And that's true for Australian cheese. All Australian cheeses come in, they get heated up. Except Hamal, for whatever it is, Hamali. Since its invention around the turn of the century, it has been very popular. It's estimated that 1/3 of the United States cheese production is marketed as processed cheese. Okay. Okay, and there's various processed cheese labels. There's Pringolin, imported of Finland. Finnish cheese, penguin cheese. Whole milk cheese made in Holland, a processed cheese. And I show this milk person with a thing. They don't show into it. There's some American cheeses. Fromage baby, for baby cheese. Well, there you go. So the processed cheese is just basically you've heated it up and nuked it. So what would be really interesting, if you really want to preserve cheese, you would, what they treat it now is, why not they treat it with gamma radiation? Okay, let's go on and I'll put this out and we'll look at Central East Asia and Australia. 10 more pages to do the rest of the cheese world. So the cheese world really disappears. After you leave Europe, America's showing promise, Africa's forget it, Middle East is Bedouin and people looking after cows, trying to mind their own business, and Israel coming along with their famous cheeses, as good as everything, and automation is coming on, blah, 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 1976. And now we're ready to go into Central East Asia. Iraq with its curious mozzarella. I don't know what Iraq mozzarella would taste like. Iraqi mozzarella. Probably the best ever. Thanks a lot for listening. Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.